Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for joining me for another week, another episode. Today's show will be an interview with Ian Eagle of CBS and Turner Sports. You know him on the NFL with Dan Fouts, number two team there behind Anton Romo, who does the NCAA tournament as well. Versatile, funny, great broadcaster, and this is a very fun interview. A lot of Bill Raftery stories. For my Mike and the Mad Dog people out there, he talks about them. We get into broadcasting, hardcore broadcasting stuff, advice. He has some advice for young people trying to get in there. We talk a little bit about what's going on with Marv Albert, whether that report is true about Turner trying to maybe make a change there. So we cover a lot of stuff, but Ian's got some great stories, and I'm sure you will enjoy this interview. Not because of me, but because of Ian. He was fantastic. So appreciate you listening, and let's go right now to Ian Eagle on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, one of my favorites in broadcasting, funny guy, and just a good all-around dude, CBS, Turner Sports, Ian Eagle. Ian, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy, good to talk to you, man.
Thanks for coming on. You know, it's funny. I was looking through some stuff on you, you know, doing a little research, trying to be professional. It is, you know, it is amazing how long you've been around. You ever, 19 years now at CBS, 25 years doing the Nets. You ever think about your longevity? Because you, I still think of you as like one of the new guys, but you're one of the grizzled veterans.
Is it my youthful glow? Is that what it is?
I think so.
It throws people off the scent. Yeah, I've been doing this a while. I got started basically out of college when I went to FAN, and within about 16 months, I was on the air, and then things started to fall into place quickly. So I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that I was getting opportunities at an early age, and then there's just a sense of familiarity at some point. Once you hit certain dates along the way, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, then people just kind of expect you to be there.
25 years of doing the Nets, and you're not in an insane asylum yet?
Well, you're assuming that I've had no therapy. That's a big leap of faith on your part.
That's
the hard part for me to believe, that it's been 25 years. I'm 49 years old, so over half my life I've spent calling net games. I got the job on the radio side in 1994, and then I moved to the TV side the next year, and that has felt like a blur in many ways.
Does the fact that the franchise, I don't want to put you in a tough spot and have you bash the franchise, but does the fact that the franchise, I'll put it nicely, let's say has had more losing than winning years, as a broadcaster, does that ever get you down? Does that ever make you think, oh, you know, how much longer do I want to do this? I mean, the Nets are not exactly one of the model franchises in sports when it comes to winning.
Yeah, my philosophy on that, Jimmy, has probably changed through the years. Early on, when it was the second, third, fourth year of doing it, I do think you would react with the wins and losses. It would affect you in some way. And then you realize, well, wait a second, you're undefeated. They're not keeping a record of the broadcasters. So I think when I started viewing it through that prism, it helped. Then the other part was trying to attack these games on another level, trying to do it from a different angle. There's a certain sense of community when you do a local team.
Right.
Fans that are familiar with your broadcasting style, they're in on it, and you can take some chances. There's some liberties there that you don't have when you're doing a national game and your audience is scattered and you're trying to serve so many masters. But on the local side, you can show your personality, and that's how I would try to look at it. Bill Raftery was my broadcast partner for so many of those years, and it was the best thing to happen to me because he was consistently himself, and I know people say that all the time. Well, just be yourself. When the camera goes on, when the mic goes on, just be yourself. And the majority of people that do this have a tough time achieving that because there usually is a clear separation of who you are when you're off the air and who you are on the air. But what I learned with Bill was let the lines blur a bit. And we were having such a good time no matter what the result of these games were, we were having fun. We were making each other laugh. We were carrying it over to the next game and to the next season and the season beyond that. So I think that planted a seed in my mind of what this was all about. Of course, to be informative, but to try to be entertaining too.
I wanted to save a little portion of this podcast for some Bill Raftery stories, but since you mentioned him now, every listener who follows the Raft, whether it was his days doing the Nets or now nationally doing the CBS, the NCAA tournament, and the ESPN, Fox Sports, he's been all over.
Sure.
We all think we know what the Raft is. And would it be safe to say what you see is what you get with Mr. Raftery?
Yeah, that would be the perfect way to put it. And I know lots of people say it, but very few people actually live up to that theory. He is 100% bona fide, natural, organic, everything is in the moment. And I think it's part of what's made him so successful. You know, the part that maybe gets buried a little bit is how prepared he is and how much research he does and how much tape he watches and how much he cares about the game of basketball.
Right.
Of course, the sayings become the thing, but being around him and seeing everything that goes into a broadcast for him, you realize that it's just a way of life. And I think on my broadcast career, when I look back on it all, it really was the best thing to ever happen to me. And I can't even begin to make that point any more clearly, that I got paired with him at such a young age and he accepted me the way that he did. And we formed this real true friendship, changed the course of my career.
And listen, I don't think anyone would question Raftery as an analyst. No one has more passion for college basketball. He knows the players. He knows the teams. He's a great analyst. And I think you saw that because everyone was so naturally happy for him when he got the number one gig for the tournament after Greg Anthony got in some trouble and they moved Raftery up. So I don't think anyone would question that. So let's get into the late night stories. Give me one Raftery story, maybe after hours, closing down a bar. You know, it was funny. I think I asked Charles Barkley. I think Charles said Raftery could close down the bar better than Charles. That's all you really need to know, I think.
Yeah, I think with Bill, what I learned very early on is you certainly can't try to keep up with him.
Right.
That's not a smart move. And my first couple of years, keep in mind, I'm 25, 26, 27. His age was undisclosed, but it was a higher number than mine. And it would be midnight, and I'm feeling it, but I didn't want to leave. First of all, I knew he would rip me to shreds if I did. So now it's one. Now it's two. Now it's a little deeper. And now he's giving it the, you want one more, Bird? You want to go one more? There's a bartender there that wanted to close 90 minutes earlier, but he's being entertained. Bill is so entertaining and so ingratiating that people then will bend the rules for him.
Right.
So there are many occasions. Finally, by year three or four, I just realized, okay, this is a hazard to my health. I'm just going to move on and go about my business. I'll take the initial rip from him and just assume by tomorrow it'll be fine. And that's basically what would happen.
Yeah.
He would rip me as I left the tavern or bar. And then the next morning, he might be on the treadmill and I'd walk in there and I'm like, ooh, is Bill pissed off at me? And I'd walk in and say, oh, hey, Bird. And he'd say, we had fun last night, right? I was like, yeah, we had a great time. I left 3 hours before you, but it was enjoyable. There was a dinner in Orlando pretty early on in my tenure with the Nets, and one of the owners of the Nets, there were seven owners at that time, Jimmy, so you can imagine all the posturing that was going on amongst seven successful men that had a piece of the Nets. And one of the owners, by the name of Don Unger, really nice guy, And he kept telling us, hey, I want to take you guys to dinner. I'm taking you guys to dinner. So finally we go to dinner down in Orlando, and he takes me and Bill and the television crew at the time. He takes the radio guys. So it ends up being a table for 12. And we go to a fancy Italian restaurant, and I'm sitting next to Bill. And it's towards the end of the meal, and Bill makes a motion towards the waiter. And the motion was for coffee, but he looped his thumb and his pointer, his finger together.
Right.
And you couldn't tell, was it for coffee or for the check?
Right.
But I know it's for coffee. He's like, hey, little coffee. So
with
Don Unger,
with Sambuca, I assume.
Yeah. He wanted Sambuca in it. Yes, 100%. He put a little buca, maybe a little buca in there. But Don Unger, the owner, one of the owners of the team, thinks that Bill is asking for the check.
Oh my God!
And he quickly says to Bill, "Hey, Bill, I got this. I asked you guys to dinner. I got this." And now Bill turns, and I'm the only one that realized what was going on, and he says, No, Don, let me. None of these guys are going to pick up the check. And I said, Bill, you were asking for coffee. Shut up, Bert. Don says, No. I insist. This is on me. So, of course, Don pays for the check. Couldn't be any nicer. We get up to walk out. I said, Bill, was that for coffee or not? He goes, shut up, Bert. We walk outside. Finally, it's just the two of us now walking back to the hotel. And I said, that was for coffee. He goes, it was for coffee. And that's him in a nutshell.
He's great.
He's just always looking at life in a joyous fashion.
And, you know, it's funny. I'm thinking about this as you're speaking. And I feel like Raftery, and I feel like you're in this category, too, as guys who sort of have gotten more popular as the years go on. Usually it's the other way. It's interesting. So there was a report today, Marchand in the Post, I'm sure you've seen it, had this report that TNT might be looking to move Marv out of the lead role and Brian Anderson may be taking over. And no disrespect to you, but I went on Twitter and said, you know, Harlan would be the natural replacement. And mm-hmm. I got a ton of people saying, no, Ian Eagle, which is very nice and flattering, I'm sure, for you to hear that. But I feel like, and I feel like almost by you guys not being on Twitter, or at least active on Twitter, it almost adds to the popularity. I think that's like I would recommend every announcer stay off Twitter if you want to stay popular, I think. But I do feel like you and Raftery, the popularity grows each year.
Well, I think with Bill, he wears well. Yeah. The more you see him, the more you like him. And I believe the ultimate goal in all this, when you're doing these games, you hope you resonate enough with an audience where someone says, man, I'd like to have dinner with that guy, or I'd like to sit down and chat with him for 30 minutes, and it wouldn't be annoying, it would be fun. And Bill, by the way, is a really good teammate. He's not someone that has to dominate over the course of a broadcast. I like to think of myself in the same way, that it's collaborative. It's not me taking over, it's shared conversation. And I believe that's the goal. We're trying to figure out exactly how you connect with people, how you connect with the public. And ultimately, to me, that's the true objective. Well, there was a game that Bill and I did together, Jimmy, that it was the only time that I remember where I had to take off the headset because it went in a direction that I didn't I kind of anticipated, but I didn't know if you would go there.
Oh, let me hear this
story. We did a World Basketball Championship game for NBA Entertainment, and you do it out of the Secaucus Studios, even though the game was taking place in Spain. And it was Spain versus China. And I'm doing my prep work, I'm doing my notes, I'm making my boards, and there's a player on China, his last name is Wang, and there's another player, and his last name is Dong, and they're both very much active for the Chinese national team. So I'm doing my prep, and we show up now into Caucus. We're together maybe 20 minutes before the game even starts. I don't say a word to Bill about it. I don't mention it.
Because once it's out there, then you're going to be paying attention to it, and then that makes it worse.
Exactly. Yeah. the second play of the game, Wang intercepts the ball and flips it ahead to Dong. And I make the call. Here's Gasol, intercepted by Wang. Lead feed for Dong, who lays it in. And there's just a pause, and I turn and I look at Bill, and we're in this very nondescript studio watching it on a big screen. And Bill just looks me right in the eye and says, "Hey, Bird, you gotta love Wang." And that's it. I don't know why in the moment I could not contain myself. First of all, I'm thinking about our audience.
Right.
I don't even know who's watching out there. The thing's airing at the time on NBA TV. It's the middle of the day.
Right.
And I literally have to take my headset off to the point where the producer is hitting talkback saying, guys, three possessions. So the fact that Bill is willing to go there, do it in a playful fashion, to me, that explains a great deal as to why people seem to like him more year in, year out.
Right. He's the best. I mentioned that Marv thing. Can I put you on the spot and ask you about that? What I mean,
yeah.
I personally, I'm not in the broadcasting business like you, and I know this is a business, but I feel like Marv should be able to call his own shots. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, look, he's the best to ever do it.
Right.
Nobody has made more of an impact calling NBA games than Marv Albert. He's been the gold standard forever. He was my idol growing up. This is really why I got into the business, because I watched him not just do the Knicks and listen to him do the Rangers and do the 6 and 11 o'clock news on NBC and football and boxing, all of it. But his style, it just captured your attention. He knew how to build the moment, build the drama, and then pay it off succinctly and do it in a fashion that really brought you in. So using that as the baseline, everybody's got a boss, and everybody in this business has a boss. These decisions are made. Oftentimes, they're made without your input. Marv has certainly built up enough equity in the business where he has been able to pick and choose some situations for himself and make things happen, and he's earned that. I have no idea about how this story plays out, but Marv Albert's been the voice of the NBA forever, and there's a reason why. As to all of this, look, these are friends.
Right.
Brian Anderson, Kevin Harlan, Marv Albert. Broadcasters, in many ways, can be like ice cream flavors. You love ice cream, that's understood, but someone might like this flavor, and somebody else might like that flavor.
Right.
And oftentimes, it's the boss who gets to pick exactly which flavor they want to have.
It's a shame, because it should be the fans who get to pick the flavors, but that's just me speaking as a fan. When you when you hear this story, let's say it plays out where TNT decides, you know what, you know, Marv's done a great job for us. We want to move in a different direction, maybe get a little younger, and they put out, and you know. When you hear that, do you have like a competitive thing like, okay, I want that gig, or, you know, or do you think I can't control it? The bosses pick who the bosses want, like you just said, or do you have a competitive move up the ladder type of Nate mentality?
Well, I think the goal is to do the biggest games.
Right.
You know, that's why you get into this. Initially, when you get into this business, the hope is just to make a living. That's the first hope.
Right.
Oh, wow, somebody would pay me to do this? That's novel. I'm in. And then as time goes on, my initial thought when I got into the business was, I just want to sound like everybody else. I don't want anybody to question when I come on the air. I just want to blend in. And then a few years go by and you say to yourself, no, I don't want to sound like everybody else. I want to sound like myself. I want to have my own distinct sound. I want people to tune in and know, oh, okay, I know this voice. I'm familiar with this voice. I know what to expect. There's a certain level that is expected when I hear this voice. And of course, there's part of you that is competitive because you want to do the biggest events.
Right.
With that said, the other side of the equation that you just laid out is the reality. It's not your choice. It's not your call. So the only thing within your control is do quality work, treat people well, be a good teammate, and hope that circumstances, timing, network alliances go your way. Beyond that, it's out of your control. It truly is.
If you could pick, perfect world, you're not taking anyone's job, but if you could pick, would you rather call an NBA Finals or a Super Bowl?
Whew. You know, I think the Super Bowl is just considered the pinnacle. There's something about that.
Right.
There are so few voices that have had the chance to do it. It does rotate, as we know, every year, and the three major networks get a crack at it, and those jobs just don't turn over at a high rate. But if you're asking me what Mike Breen has done now over a long period of time, that is an achievement that will never be matched. And I do think it's flown under the radar a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Breen has been the voice of the NBA Finals for an entire generation of sports fans. And that's quite an accomplishment.
Yep.
It means that you're excellent at your job, which Mike is. It means that you have handled everything the right way within your own company, which he has, even though there's been management changes, there have been changes at the color commentator position. And he has been the staple. He has been the rock in that situation. So I have a lot of respect for Mike as a person. And I also have a lot of respect for him as a professional and the way that he's gone about his business. And it's not about him. It's about the game.
Right.
And he's made it that way because of how he approaches it.
So Super Bowl or NBA Finals? I don't think you gave me an answer.
Yeah. I know, you're such a skilled interviewer.
Thank
Most
you.
People would just move on.
Yes.
They'd say, okay, he said some words.
Yeah.
And,
well, because I think of you as a basketball guy first, just because I think I grew up, like I said, I remember you and Raftery calling the Nets when you were on Sports Channel. Forget
yep.
MSG or whatever it is now, the Yes Network. So in my head, I always think of you as basketball first, but you are on the number two NFL team for CBS. You do call a playoff game, and the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl. So that's why I'm curious about if, in a perfect world, if you could pick what it would be.
You know, it's funny. This is not anything that anyone would know, and there's no reason that they should know it. But it was a part of my reality 3 years ago. The Super Bowl was in Santa Clara, Super Bowl 50.
Mm-hmm.
It was Denver against Carolina. And, of course, Jim Nantz was on the call for CBS. Jim's wife was pregnant. And I was told by CBS to prepare for the game in case you have to call it.
Okay.
So that week leading up, now she ended up having the baby the week of the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And everything timed out perfectly. I still ended up being part of the coverage. I was doing pre and post game down on the field on a secondary set. We had Brandon Marshall and Sean Payton, and then Boomer Esiason joined me post game. So the preparation was for a purpose, but I did prepare for the game as if I was doing it with that mentality because of the circumstances involved. I don't see myself as a basketball announcer or a football announcer or a college basketball announcer. I like to think that whatever the assignment is, that I'm up for it. If they tell me, hey, we need you to do golf, then I'll prepare and do golf. We need you to do tennis, I'll prepare and do tennis. We need you to do boxing, I'll prepare and do boxing. That's truly the way that I try to look at this. And as far as answering the initial question, which is what would be the dream as I continue to avoid it?
That's fine. You don't have to answer. Because I have a better...
Either one. Truly, Jimmy. Either one.
I believe you.
It would be amazing.
I have a better question. How pissed were you that Nance's wife didn't give birth on Super Bowl Sunday?
I never... By the way, I never, ever anticipated. I think this was a, like, double secret plan F.
Okay.
Just in case break glass, if needed, situation for CBS. They just wanted to know that they were covered. And the reality was Jim was never going to miss that game, and nor should he. Right. It was a career achievement. It was Super Bowl 50, and everything worked out perfectly. And he's got two young kids, and Courtney was okay, and everybody was great. So it's all good.
All right. Now, you just mentioned the whole list of things you call college basketball, NBA, NFL, tennis, boxing, this, that, and the other thing. Do you have an off season at all? Do you get any time off during the year? I mean, the versatility is good, but most announcers get a little break here and there, but you seem like you go 365.
Yeah, no, July 6th is good.
That's it.
So I don't know if you want to hang on July 6th. But no, I've definitely cut back. I'd say the last 3 years I've realized that I needed some downtime and some balance, and I have shut it down for about 4 or 5 weeks in the summer. I haven't taken assignments. I've said no to a bunch of things, and it's helped. It's just helped me try to achieve some kind of serenity. And trust me, all of this is said in context, Jimmy.
Right, I know.
That everything I'm doing is a dream come true.
Yes, I asked the question. You're not complaining.
Travel, I know. The day-to-day travel, the challenge of juggling five games in a week and getting from point A to point B to point C to point D and taking a red eye and going the day of and rolling the dice and hoping the weather holds up. That's part of the process, but I realize that it beats actual work.
Right. I'm curious. You got into we talked about this at the top. You got into this business a while ago. If you had to give someone advice today, I know you run a broadcasting camp, correct? Or you do something?
I did. Yeah. Right. It was Bruce Beck and I did it for 15 years, and I stopped doing it a couple of years ago. Bruce is still doing it out in Westchester, and then Chris Carino and Tim Capstro, who's the Nets on radio, they've continued it here in Jersey.
I'm curious if the advice you'd give an 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old man or woman, I'm curious if the advice you'd give them today would have been different than the advice you would have given them maybe 10, 15 years ago. I mean, in terms of how has the business changed in terms of the advice you'd give someone today?
Yeah, the one part that hasn't changed is you have to immerse yourself in it. That's the one thing that will never change. If you really want to do it, then you have to make it your business to know everything there is to know about the part of the business that you want to get into. I was interested in play-by-play, so that meant even when I was interning at FAN in the summer of 1989, during the downtime, and there was plenty of it, read through every media guide, learn the names of every play-by-play guy in the four major sports, learn their background, where they went to school, what kind of degree they had, their path to getting that job. And that's what I did. I made it my business in that summer to know everything I could possibly know about the people that had the jobs that I one day wanted to have. It seems pretty simple. It seems pretty obvious, but I think oftentimes people overlook that. They say to themselves, well, I'll just figure it out. I'll complete my own path. And that's great, except you need a frame of reference. You need to be able to create that vision in your own head based on someone else's story that pulled it off. And it may not be exactly like yours, but that would be something to me is a must. That's not even a question mark as to what you should be doing if you want to get involved in this business, whatever aspect that might be. Mm-hmm. The difference now between what's going on in the business today compared to 1990 when I was getting out of college is there are just so many more places to do it.
Right.
And it's, to me, a great thing that there are more places, but the downside is, can you make a living? Can you actually do this as a vocation and turn it into a life? That, to me, is the harder part, saying that, oh, yeah, I do a bunch of stuff on my own in my house, and I post it online. Okay, great. What is the next step? What is it leading to? Obviously, hard work is going to be a part of it. Talent, to me, always wins out. If you have ability, true ability, natural ability, and you polish it and you hone it and you get a chance to improve and develop, someone's going to figure it out. Someone's going to give you a chance eventually, but it really requires you being honest about it, honest with yourself, honest with your own abilities, and also then understanding that you still have to connect with people at some point. You can't just text your way to a job, right, or email your way to a job. You will have to look someone in the eye and convince them to trust you to do the job at hand. That part has not changed at all.
That's good stuff. You mentioned your days at FAN. Now, you did updates for Mike and the Mad Dog, but you weren't a producer at all, right? You just did the updates?
No, I was.
Oh, you are a producer.
I was the associate producer on their show in 1992. So all of 92. And then in 93, I was moved to a full-time on-air job.
I'm sure you have many stories from 1992.
I have many stories from 92 and beyond. And if you remember back to that time, Jimmy, that's when Mike and Chris really started to hit their stride.
Right.
To the point where they were becoming a phenomenon in New York sports. They were starting to get some traction nationally. They were rewriting the way you do sports talk. They were so unique and different in the way they went about their jobs, yet somehow it just worked. It fit. And it was the perfect mix of what you looked for, and they were doing 5 hours a day, five and a half, depending upon the time of year, if they were leading into Mets Extra during the summer, and it was phenomenal. It was like going to graduate school in many ways for me. I didn't really think of it in those terms at the time, but I look back on it now, it was an education.
What did you learn from them?
Chemistry, more than anything else.
Yeah.
There is something magical that takes place when the two people can carry on a conversation that others want to listen to. And there was something truly magical about the two of them together. And I didn't take that for granted. That stood out to me, that right, they just understood and knew how to move the show along. And I carried that with me when I started doing play-by-play, and I've worked with 135 different partners over the years. Somewhere along the line, when I was working with Bill, I would ask him about different guys that he worked with, and every time he'd say, "You know, Bird, I should have kept a list." He would write down a few names on a napkin, and then he would use it to blow his nose and throw it out. And I thought to myself, because it was still very early in my career, I said, "You know what? I'm going to keep a list, because who knows? Maybe yeah. when I look up in 20, 25 years, it's going to be a sizable list, and I'll be happy that I did it."
Right.
And I did.
Yeah. One of my biggest regrets is not keeping a list of people I've interviewed, because I forget sometimes, which is scary in and of itself that you forget someone you interview. But
right. And I think probably like you, early in your career when you started doing this, you thought, well, I'll never forget this.
Right.
I'll always remember that I interviewed X, and then 10 years go by, 15 years go by, and someone tells you, "Oh, I heard your interview with so-and-so," and you think to yourself, "Did you? Because I have no recollection whatsoever."
Yeah.
And it was the same thing with me. Initially, with all the analysts, I was like, "Oh, all right, it's been 12 people. I'll never forget the 12. And then it started growing and growing and growing. And I really believe, looking back on it with Mike and Chris, that played a big role for me in understanding chemistry, understanding how important it was, even if you weren't best friends, to find some common ground on the air and find something, latch on to something that the audience can connect with.
Yeah.
And I can't say definitively with the 135 different people that I've worked with that I'm still close with all of them. We text all the time, holiday cards. No, it's just not true. It's not possible.
Right.
But I can say with confidence that with all of them, I found something. I found something that we could create together and have some connective tissue that would carry us for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, or 3 hours, depending upon the sport and the broadcast.
And you've worked with such a variety, old, young, and, you know, people have done it for a while, newbies. So that's, I mean, you get credit for making those broadcasts move along too. Don't sell yourself short there. I felt like Mike and Chris gave us a little bit of a tease like a year ago, maybe 9 months ago, about maybe doing something together again. But that's pretty dead now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a shame.
I think
it's a shame.
Yeah, unfortunately, circumstances and different points of their lives and different things that they're looking for at this stage. It really was something special, and I'm not sure they could have ever recreated that, but every time they've been on the air since the breakup,
oh, it's amazing.
There is still something there. Yep. Yeah, it doesn't go away completely, and it's not difficult to see why they were so successful. They just pick up where they left off to some degree, and it just was comfortable. It was always comfortable to listen to.
I heard you on with Doug a couple of weeks ago, and he just, the energy and the still mispronouncing the names. It's as beautiful as ever. It's as beautiful as ever.
It was. He's something.
Oh,
It's amazing, because I think people just assumed it was an act for years.
Right.
Well, there's no one that could be that manic. There's no one that could be that insane when it comes to sports. And the reality was, it was never an act. It's still not an act. Who he is, similar to what we talked about with Bill Rafter, and I think that's why he's been so successful. Yeah. Who he is off the air is who he is on the air. His life is one continuous talk show. And I would tell him stuff in confidence in the car ride that he would store away. And I'm not saying he would use it against me 2 days later. He'd use it against me 2 years later. That's how ridiculous his brain is.
He is a savant.
I would tell him stuff, personal stuff too, Jimmy. Like stuff about family and then like 2 years later, say, wow, everybody, Ian is not a big fan of his cousin. He told me so. I'm like, dude, what are you? What, you don't do that. Don't say that.
That sounds like Chris. Do you have Mike's app? Are you paying $8.99 for a month for Mike's app?
I'm not a huge app guy.
Okay.
I'm not a huge technology guy. That's part of it. Like one quick story on that that people that know me are familiar with. But this is a pretty good indicator. A couple of years ago, my wife, my son, my daughter, they said, why don't you have Uber? I said, I don't really need it. You know, there are cabs when I get to an airport. Fortunately, with some of the companies I work for, they might provide a car service. I said, I'm good. And they said, look, just sign up. What's the worst thing? If you don't use it, you don't use it. I said, all right, I'll sign up. So I go to my office, I'm going through the steps, I hit the app, I'm tapping all the questions, I'm going on and on and on, and I get to the final question, I'm thinking to myself, man, they need a lot of information, I'm just trying to sign up for Uber, and I hit the final thing, and it says, congratulations, you are now an Uber driver. So I've been
doing this
on my...
As if you're not busy enough.
On my downtime, I'll just pick up some people and take them to Newark Airport. So if that's an indicator, and you ask me about Twitter and all these things, look, I know what's going on. I have a burner account. I'm familiar with what's happening out there. I just chose early on not to participate. And fortunately, I was high enough up the ladder in my career that I wasn't forced to by the companies that I worked for. They asked me, hey, is this something you would want to do? And I said, no, I don't think so. They said, oh, no problem.
It would be a ridiculous thing to force someone to do if they don't want to do it, because it would just lead to trouble and problems.
I think they were encouraging. I think they were encouraging people to get the name out and get the brand out there, all of that. For me, it's no more complicated than... I've got a bunch of full-time jobs that I try to do really well. And the idea of having this other job, which it is, and you could attest to it because you're highly active on it, it's another job that you have to worry about and think about, and you have to, again, be immersed in. And I said to myself, I'm not going to be able to do this the way that I would want to do it. So I choose not to do it. I get it. I understand why it's so popular. I understand why people would be addicted to it. It's incredible, getting information quickly, sharing information, and then sharing opinions. But it's not productive for me, especially...
Oh, it's not productive for me either, don't worry.
Yeah, in-game to be focused on that...
No way.
...and lose your focus on the job at hand.
No way.
You're only asking for trouble.
Right, no way. It's funny because I think I had heard through the grapevine, I don't know how, but I had heard, I think, that... you had a burner account where you check things, but you don't tweet or whatever. And then it was confirmed when I saw you over the summer and you said, oh, I love that Sterling thing you tweeted last night. And I was like, wait, you're not on Twitter. Yeah. Wait, how'd you see that?
Yeah,
yeah. So
exactly. And then, you know, like amidst an NFL game where you've committed all this time and energy and the information and the accuracy and everything that's expected of you during that 3-hour broadcast, and then to go on Twitter and see that you're being called an ass clown. That might bring you back down to earth very quickly in the moment and take your focus off what you have to actually do that day on the air.
You have to, if you're a play-by-play person, you have to be insane to be on Twitter. But like I said, when I tweeted about the TNT thing today, there were a lot of no ass clown, just Ian would be great. So take solace in that.
Thank you.
So do you don't ever tweet? You just follow some people?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I've never tweeted in my life.
Two quick, really stupid things before we wrap this up. What is this? There was a thing about you. I remember hearing this. You've never had, is it soup or salad or what is it? Break this down for me.
Yeah, this is when rumors can really damage a person's reputation.
I think I heard Ian Eagle has never had soup.
No, I love soup. Okay. I had soup today, in fact.
What have you never had? Isn't there something you've never had?
There are many things I've never had. Salad is one of them.
That's it, salad.
I've never had a salad. And I know someone's going to say, like, well, wait a second, have you had the lettuce? Yes, I've had lettuce. Have you had a tomato? Yes, I've had a tomato. Have you eaten onion? Yes, I've had onion. Oh, yeah, I've had individual parts of the salad, but I've never had a salad. The issue for me was always the dressing. And that is a part of a larger scope issue for me that I know is not normal, but I accept as part of who I am, and that's a condiment issue.
Right.
I'm not a condiment guy.
Okay.
So I
do you do ketchup with, do you do ketchup on fries?
That would be a condiment. So no.
Okay.
I don't eat ketchup with fries. I've never had ketchup.
Okay. So let me just say this. I'm looking here. We've been taping now for 40 minutes. I could literally do 2 hours for you on this on this topic alone.
Easily. I have so many items that I've never had that I don't even want to tell you because you probably would lose respect for me as a human being.
Here's the thing about it. I actually sympathize with you on this because I'm not a big condiment guy either. I hate ketchup. I hate mayo. I hate mustard.
Yep.
So I'm with you on that. But like I said, I can do 2 hours on this topic because I find it fascinating. Now, the salad thing, though, that one is interesting to me, I got to say. Because if you've had all of the parts of it.
I have.
So you just haven't mixed it.
I've just never had it together to form a salad.
Gotcha.
And then I'll take it another step further. I've never had potato salad or pasta salad.
I don't like it if it has mayo. That's
coleslaw. Yeah any of that. Yeah, again, there's condiments involved. It's just not... It's not for me. I get that question a lot. You know, obviously I get questions about my name a lot. People, it's made up. Like, really? Yeah. You think a guy would make up this name? I would create all this trouble for myself. My name's Carl Smith, but it's not flashy. Let me see. What year is it? 86. Oh, wait, Louis Gossett, Jason Gedrick, Iron Eagle. That works. Let's go with that. My first year at CBS was 1998, and I'm paired with Mark May, and we have to go do a preseason game together that is not going to air. It's just a game for us to rehearse, to get the kinks out, and it's Dallas at Jacksonville, and we go to Jacksonville. Mark says, hey, let's go on the field before the game. Mark's a big guy, 6'5". I am not a big guy, so we stand out. We're walking along the sideline, and there he is, Jerry Jones, and Mark calls him over. You know, a lot of battles through the years. And hey, Jerry, meet my new broadcast partner, Ian Eagle. He says, Iron? I said, no, it's Ian. Ian Eagle goes, Iron. No, it's Ian. He said, Iron? I said, yeah, it's Iron. We'll just go with that.
Well,
Iron Eagle.
Ian Eagle is a great broadcast name, but I don't think the Ian thing is weird because I grew up on 902.0 with Ian Ziering. So, like, you're not the only Ian out there. There's another great Ian out there.
Only because you would appreciate this. A few years ago, my wife was asked to attend a little event where they were doing skincare products
right.
in someone's house in New Jersey. So she shows up, and who's there? Ian Ziering.
Oh, wow.
He's part of this skincare product line, and he's talking about all the benefits. He's been using it for years. This is how he stays young. And, you know, he does his presentation, and there's some cocktails and hors d'oeuvres after the fact. My wife is not someone that would just go up to people and try to spark conversation. But she said, you know what? How often am I going to see Ian Ziering? So I'm going to go over and say something. So she goes up to Ian Ziering and says, hey, my name's Elisa. I live here in New Jersey. He says, oh, okay, yeah. She says, I just want to let you know, I'm actually married to an Ian. And he said, yeah, so?
Oh, God. Come on, Ian, give us a little something.
Nothing.
Not you, Ian Ziering.
Steve Sanders crushed her.
That's it. That yeah. I mean, come on. Steve Sanders, you got to be a little more friendly to people. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Bad job by Steve Sanders. The last thing I would love for you to do for me, if you don't mind. You almost had a brush with the Howard Stern show once, I believe.
Yes.
And I am a huge Howard Stern fan. And I would like to know how you, what happened here that you did not come through with this gig?
Yeah. So I started working at Sirius doing an NBA show. They hired me a number of years ago. And have you been to the studios ever,
yes,
Jimmy?
Yes, I have. A couple of times.
They're massive.
Yes.
It's really impressive.
Yeah.
It's a compound. Yeah. And I came from FAN Radio. It was not the most luxurious of studios when it was in Astoria, New York. It's much nicer now.
In a basement.
In Soho. Yeah, it was in a basement. We had to go through the catacombs of Kaufman Astoria Studios to get there. So that's what I was accustomed to. That was big-time radio. I show up at Sirius, and it's amazing. It's breathtaking what they've put together. So it's my second or third day. I'm walking to the studio for the NBA, and someone stops me in the hallway and says, hey, you're Ian Eagle. I said, yeah. He said, hey, yeah, I actually work at the Howard Stern show, and we've got this other channel, Howard 101, and your name came up the other day. I said, really? What for? Huh. He said, well, we're doing a bit with Howard, and it's anal ring toss. I said, wow. I said, really? He said, yeah. Is that something you would be interested in, doing play-by-play for it? I said, well, I've got a deal with another show, and I'm doing play-by-play for rectal ring toss. So I think that's probably not going to work. He says, really? I said, no. I can't do play-by-play for anal ring toss. He says, oh, man, it would have been great. But no problem.
You don't think the CBS suits would have appreciated that gig?
No. So now fast forward a year later. So now it's like 08, and I'm driving into the studio, and my phone rings, and it's from a Sirius phone number. Mm-hmm. I can tell by the area code and the prefix. So I pick up the phone, and I hear, hey, Ian, it's Gary Delabate. And it's Gary. It's Baba Booey.
Sure it wasn't Sour Shoes?
No, it was not Sour Shoes, who I've also met, by the way. I met in the elevator at Sirius. I get in the elevator, and Sour Shoes turns. And Sour Shoes used to call me all the time when I was at FAN.
Uh-huh.
Overnights, Mike from Mayapak.
Right.
He would do incredible creative stuff, and I would just let him go. I was doing overnights, or I was on at 3 a.m, and it was fantastic. It would fill 7 to 10 minutes. So it's Gary Delabate.
Right.
He and I had met him a few times. He's a big sports fan, like legitimate sports.
Yes,
fan,
very big sports fan. Yeah.
So he says, "Hey, look, we're doing a big promotion for the movie Balls of Fury. You remember this movie? It was a ping pong movie.
Yeah.
And we'd like you to do the play-by-play for it." I said, when is this? He said, it's May 27th. I said, I'm doing the French Open, the Tennis Channel. I'm going to be in Paris. And there's a pause. And Gary says, and completely straight, says, "So you would do that over this?" I said, "Yeah, I'm going to do one of the four majors instead of the Balls of Fury Howard Stern promotion." So,
now, what does it say that when something comes up like Balls of Fury or Anal Ring Toss, you're the guy that the Howard Stern show is?
What's happening in these production meetings? Yes. Like, I have to reassess.
Ian would
exactly
be perfect.
Where I'm at.
Yeah.
We've got the guy.
Ian would be perfect for that gig. That's too funny. All right, well, I really appreciate the time and the stories, and I enjoyed this thoroughly. And keep up the good work. NFL on CBS. What game you have this week with Mr. Fouts?
This week is in Los Angeles, Chargers and the Broncos in the AFC West.
Chargers, Broncos. Chargers are on fire, so that's good. Although they don't really have a home field, it's kind of those games. The Rams and Chargers, it's such a debacle for the NFL. When you're in those states, like, I don't know, it bothers me, but I don't want to get you into that. But all right, so Chargers, Broncos, and then you get a playoff game this year, as always with CBS, and then NBA. You doing the play? We got a long way to go, but NBA playoffs, tournament, all over the place. Ian Eagle. Thanks, Ian.
Great
appreciate
talking
it.
To you, man.
All right, take
all
care.
Right, we'll do it again.
All right, my thanks to Ian Eagle. Love those Bill Raftery stories. Fun guy. If you don't like Ian Eagle, there's something wrong with you. That's all I got to say. Appreciate everyone listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.